I'm Marianne Kolbasek-McGee, Executive Editor at Information Security Media Group. Today I'm speaking with Jim Roeder, who is Vice President of IT at Lakewood Health System in Staples, Minnesota. We're going to be discussing findings of our recent Health Sector Coordinating Council report that examined cyber challenges faced by resource-constrained healthcare entities. Jim is co-chair of HSCC's Underserved Provider Cybersecurity Task Group. Jim, just for starters, tell us a little bit about Lakewood Health. How big of an organization is it, and what kind of services do you provide?
So, Lakewood Health System, we're a critical access hospital and rural health clinic located in Staples, Minnesota. It's kind of in the central part of the state. We serve our local community. The town is about 3,000 people, but we kind of serve a whole, area. I would say roughly 30 miles east, west, south, north of us. So, in those areas, we do have five rural health clinics. We have a long-term care facility, slash SNF, a couple assisted living facilities, a durable medical equipment facility, and then we are currently in the process of building our cancer center and hoping to open the doors on that around early November.
So, Jim, when we talk about under-resourced healthcare entities, we often think of small rural hospitals or small doctor practices. But I guess in reality, many types of entities kind of fall into that bucket. That includes critical access hospitals, family clinics, skilled nursing facilities, community healthcare centers, and other sorts of entities that kind of, fall into that. Why are these entities so often under-resourced with cyber?
I think a lot of it comes from, they're trying to serve these small communities and offer as many services as they can to try and allow, those patients to stay close to home and not have to travel far for those services. But in doing so, they gotta do all these different things with less. And I even think of like my IT team we have here. If I look at like say what I would typically call a systems admin, he's probably doing three or four different roles because, that's what we have to do to survive and to make things possible.
So, Jim, the HSCC research found that only about 14% of healthcare organizations say their IT security teams are fully staffed. Over half say they need more help, and 30% say they are understaffed or severely understaffed. So, how does that translate to the everyday security posture of these entities when it comes to the manpower they need for activities like vulnerability patching, log auditing, and so many other essentials?
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest challenges that, these facilities, much like ourselves, face a lot is, there's more we know we need to do. We'd love to do more. It's just resource constrained, whether it's, financially or with work staff, and I always think like a good example is, you look at budget wise, okay, you have $1, $2 million and you can get a new CT machine. Or you could get, say, some sort of EDR software for your security posture. Well, you look at that CT machine, all of a sudden, you can bring in more revenue, you can provide a better service to your patients, you're able to keep your doors open that way. And so there's that balance and give and take that, you really have to go to your board and, your fiscal team and really try to promote what you need for cybersecurity and the reasons behind it. And and that's at the end of the day, that's I think what we heard a lot in these interviews is everyone knows they need to do more, would love to do more, would love to make sure we're securing things, but at the end of the day, the resources just aren't there to do it.
So, Jim, you mentioned a little bit about, how your organization faces some of these challenges as well. Tell us a little bit more about that and how are you tackling those challenges?
Yeah. So if I think back to oh, probably a year ago now. We didn't even have, an EDR solution in place to help us try to be more proactive against cybersecurity attacks. One of the great programs that kind of came out last summer was the, when the White House worked with Google and Microsoft, and Microsoft expanded their nonprofit program to critical access hospitals across the United States. And we were able to leverage that, and all of a sudden we could get, their, a different level of 365 licensing that included some security features, and start implementing some of those things. And and now we've been able to kind of, what we're working on is moving to a zero trust approach to our whole network, which never seemed fiscally feasible before. So it's things like that, and that was, to get the critical access hospitals on board and be able to do that. Now, if we could take that and expand it, and include other things like, if it's the, what you mentioned before, the long-term cares, the rural emergency hospitals, the SNFs, Indian Health Services, all those different small underserved practices, we could start to make a dent in some of these things.
So, Jim, you mentioned taking advantage of some of the free resources from Google, and I guess CISA also has some help that's offered to healthcare entities. I'm not sure what the status is on all that, but any other tips for stretching the cybersecurity budget at organizations that are indeed, so constrained with what they can spend on cyber?
Yeah, I think what you mentioned there was great. There's the CISA stuff, looking for some of those free tools. A lot of peers I've talked to, they've started to look more and more at some of the open source stuff to see if they can leverage some of those tools, just to make sure they're trying to, preserve their network, make it safe, keep their patient data secure. You start to look at anything and everything you can leverage what's available out there. When we had the interviews, common one we heard a lot was, is there some sort of workforce augmentation that can be done out there for cybersecurity? And whether it be funded at the federal level, the state level, just trying to grow what's out there for cybersecurity. And, and I don't remember which specific interview it was, but they had a great idea where they weren't far away from a very large system, geographically. And even if they could partner with them to have their staff come and help them out like one day a week and help implement things or make sure things are programmed and set the right way, would go a long way in securing their network.
So, Jim, assuming that funding challenges continue for the healthcare sector, what are some of the recommendations for how maybe the government or private sector industry can make it a little bit easier to help some of these under-resourced healthcare sector overcome their cyber challenges? Because as we know, it's always the weakest link, and when there's a an it, when there's an issue, it doesn't just affect that entity. It often affects the community. It often affects supply chain partners or other entities that depend on them. What's realistic, and what would you like to see as help?
Yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there with the trickle down effect from some of these things. And I think what I heard most, in all the interviews we did, as far as like a financial help, they talked a lot about if there'd be more CMS reimbursement available. But there was also a little bit of hesitancy around that if, if we had to tie it to some sort of compliance or regulation, much in the way we did meaningful use, because, as the more and more overhead that gets into it, it's less people want to do it. It's more time consuming. It takes away from things they want to do and need to do. And so a lot of it came back to, do we tie that to the cybersecurity performance goals that are out there? And, do you make it more, have it be more on the benefit side than the haircut side? So if you are doing them, you get the bonus. If you aren't able to do them, you aren't penalized. You just don't get the funding. So try to drive people to really want to implement those things to get the funding. And then another one we learned along the way, was from the USDA, and they have a really good rural loan program available for both. There is loans and grants available, depending on what you're working to implement or doing. And and we talked as a group too, if they can continue what they're doing and even expand that, that could go a long way in helping a lot of these underserved providers really be able to kind of implement more and more cybersecurity to protect these things from the attacks that, they're only becoming more and more common every day. You read the news and, more attacks.
So when you look at the cyber threat landscape and some of the incidents that we do see in the healthcare sector, are there certain areas of cybersecurity that you think are typically lacking at under-resourced entities? Is it, for instance, a lack of multi-factor authentication? Is it, what is the problem you think that as a community could be addressed?
I think, through the course of the interviews, everyone's in a little different state of where they're at and protecting things. I think multi-factor is one I think everybody's kind of gotten more and more on board with over the past couple of years, just because, what we need to do to have that second factor. The tricky part is, the bad actors are getting smarter and smarter all the time, and they're figuring out ways to even be able to get access against MFA. There's new solutions coming out, such as the passwordless stuff, like the YubiKeys and stuff, that I think hopefully will be able to even take us that next step forward. The tricky part, with everything, as we talked about, is that balance between being able to keep your doors open and implementing some of these things.
And we hear so much about AI these days, the good and the bad. Are you hopeful that AI could help the cybersecurity posture of under-resourced entities? And if so, in what way you think is it most potentially hopeful at this point?
Yeah, I'm hopeful that it will be something that'll help us out. I was on a group a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about, like, has anyone started implementing AI for security or anything like that? And it's interesting when someone posed it, all of a sudden we started talking about, well, this tool uses it a little bit, and this tool, and you don't realize how much you're actually already using it in the software you've implemented that's out there. Now, if the AI can get smart and help learn what's going on, look at your network and help us, apply the right policies or block things, I think from our standpoint, we'd be all in for that. But then the flip side of that is, ensuring that you can trust it. What's the cost ratio on it? Is it hard? Would it be something that would save us somewhere that, would be easy to implement? There's just, I think right now, as far as that goes, is it's all the unknowns that are out there. I think if something comes to market that can really help these underserved providers in implementing cybersecurity, I think that would go, it would be huge. I'm waiting to see that headline come out that someone has that tool.
And finally, Jim, what's at the top of your cybersecurity priority list this year at Lakewood and why?
Yeah, I think kind of what I alluded to a little earlier. So for us, our big thing is we want to get to that zero trust fully implemented. We're on the pathway there. We started that journey last year a little bit to get to that. Making sure we have everything in place, kind of that conditional access. So if I have, more and more users now working remote because we're in the rural setting we're at to try to attract talent and retain them, we need that ability to have that remote and hybrid workforce. At the same time, that opens up a lot of holes and stuff on our firewall. So, just making sure we have conditional access in place and that we know when we have those users connecting, we can trust the device they're coming from. It's safe, it's secure. And we're not putting things at risk. And then the other part we're really starting to dig into and look at, and it's something we heard a lot in these interviews too for this paper, is, working with third-party vendors and the risk management that comes with that. Traditionally, I would say the past couple of years and still currently, a lot of the risk falls on the health provider, not so much on the vendors. And so if we can shift that paradigm a little bit, even to 50-50, I think would be huge, because that's a part we really is kind of scary when you look at it, because a lot of them are running some outdated systems. They don't support the latest, Windows 11. So what happens this October when those systems still run Windows 10 and it's not a long-term servicing version of it? and we can't update anymore, and then you have that security hole. So I think those are probably our two focus areas that we're working on, is that zero trust in our third-party vendors and risk management.
Well, thank you so much, Jim. I've been speaking to Jim Roeder. I'm Mary Ann Kobosak-McGee of Information Security Media Group. Thanks for joining us.